if you could describe 2021 in one word, what would it be?
Roller coaster.
Yeah? Tell me more.
Does that count because it's a compound word?
It's a compound word, but it's one word. Okay. So it counts.
Yeah, the highs were really high and the lows were really low.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of jerking in between. And honestly, as you know, I don't like roller coasters.
I don't ride them.
But apparently I do in, you know, metaphorical roller coasters. That's the only roller coasters that I ride. But that was what this year was like.
Yeah, no, that sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah. And so today's show, our first show of 2022, we're just going to give an overview of our 2021, kind of look into what's happening this year in 2022. And some listeners have submitted questions so that we're going to try to give them some answers. I'm Josh.
And I'm Stacy Lee. We're missionaries in Malawi with Gospel Life Global Missions.
And this is the Gospel Life Podcast, where we talk about missions, Malawi, and more. So yeah, I said 2021 was a roller coaster and ups and downs. One of the downs was the most recent Omicron. Obviously, the news came out of our part of the world, Southern Africa, but we didn't know anything about it until everybody else knew about it, which was a very strange thing because 24 hours literally changed everything.
Oh, worldwide, everything changed. Yeah. And it was crazy because all of these countries, including the U.S., were banning people from Malawi. And they had this blanket ban for a lot of Southern African countries, including Malawi. But we didn't have Omicron in Malawi yet.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And all of a sudden, you know, I had just earlier in the week emailed, I think, three different people about different trips that they might come and visit and help us in 2022. And I told them, yeah, everything's going great, you know.
Yeah.
And then we had Thanksgiving, and I think it was Friday. I think it was the day after Thanksgiving. All of a sudden, the stock market's crashing, travel bans.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 24 hours completely changed everything.
Yeah.
And it was just complete, utter panic and nonsense.
It was. And we had Macy here. And so we decided to scramble and try to get her back to the States more quickly than we had planned.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know, which was a good thing because by Christmas, she was supposed to leave, I think it was the 22nd. And by that time, a lot of airlines were canceling a lot of flights because all of their staff were sick.
Yeah. So it was good that we got her out of the country when we could. But that's just like the latest example of the roller coaster of 2021. But we had so many great things. We had, you had your first Pastor's Wives Conference.
Yes,
which we did a
that's
show
what
about.
I was thinking of. That was so, so amazing.
And we had our first graduating class from Shepherd's Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, their final project of the church planting teams where they went out on bicycles and into unreached areas. We had, you know, all the other regular ministry stuff too, medical clinics,
mm-hmm.
pastor training.
Our oldest child became a teenager.
Yes.
Which is a roller coaster of its own.
That's right. And her sister is not far behind her. So it's quite the roller coaster of emotions.
Well, Jude will be a teenager now in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
So we will have two teenagers and one
by the end of the year.
Teenager.
By the end of the year, we'll have three teenagers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we're not old enough.
Somebody please pray for us.
We're not old enough to have teenagers. And, you know, we're talking about colleges and all that stuff in all of a sudden we're going to be shipping them out of the nest, which
before we know it,
is crazy. I mean, it's so cliche, but you know, it happens so fast.
It does. The days are long, but the years are short.
Yeah. So, you know, the big thing this coming year in 2022 is that we will go on our first furlough. And
yay!
And that's what a lot of the people on social media, when we asked for questions for the podcast, a lot of them asked about our furlough because we had mentioned it in passing and statuses and stuff. So we have several questions about that, but one question that nobody asked, and maybe they were afraid to ask, but maybe somebody has, is what is furlough? That's kind of a funny old-fashioned word.
Which I did get the question, why are you coming back?
Yeah, so that's similar.
It's a similar question. So can you explain why we're going back?
So furlough, first off, is an old-fashioned word, and sometimes it's still used outside of missions to talk about someone getting furloughed from their job, which makes it even more confusing when we talk about it in missions.
Yeah.
Because when someone's furloughed from their job, it's like they don't have any work to do in their company. So that person is kind of temporarily laid off, I guess is what that means. Whereas here, like, we're not laid off. We're not working.
For sure.
We just have to have a time to go back to our home country, the U.S., in order to reconnect with our supporters and spend some time with our family that we don't get to see very much. Mm-hmm. And that's why some organizations have kind of abandoned the word furlough and chosen terms like home assignment or stateside assignment, which makes it clear like this is not a vacation. This is working in a different place.
Yeah, I like what those other terms communicate, but they're just so long and weird.
Furlough is easy to say.
Yeah.
Stateside assignment, that just takes too much time.
Yeah, but it's true. It's definitely, I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a vacation. We want to see some parts of the U.S., do some traveling. Obviously, we're going to spend a lot of time, as much time as we can with family.
You have to have some downtime. And especially on furlough, because it's so much more stressful than normal life.
Yeah.
It's not a release of the stress. It's actually more stressful than living here and being here in many ways. It's just a different type of stress, I guess. But, you know, biblically, you see the Apostle Paul and whether it's Silas or Barnabas, they go out on these missionary journeys. They're gone for a few years, and then they come back to Antioch in Syria, which is their home church. And what they're doing is they're reporting, they're reconnecting with the people who have prayed for them and supported them. Because, you know, as a missionary, you kind of stand in between the people you're trying to reach with the gospel and the people who are sending you out. And so there needs to be a maintenance of that relationship with the senders, and then also to be able to expand those relationships. So the main thing that I'll be doing is almost every Sunday, I'll be visiting a different church and presenting about what the Lord's doing here. Some of them are churches that have supported us from the beginning, and some haven't supported us at all. And hopefully through these visits, they'll start supporting us regularly.
You're already booked for almost every Sunday that we'll be there, aren't you?
Yeah, I only have 3 open Sundays left. So if you're listening to this and you're a pastor and you'd like for me to come, just email me soon so that I can get you in the schedule, because there's only 3 left.
Yeah, josh@gospellife.org, right? Yeah,
that's right. That's right. But also, you know, you just have to reconnect with family. We have, my sister has had 2 babies.
That we've never met.
Yeah, so we have 2 nieces that one is turning 1 this week, and the other is, how old is Hazel?
3?
Yeah, maybe. We're bad uncle and aunt. But yeah, we haven't. We've talked to them on FaceTime, but we haven't met them in person. So, you know, those are things that are important. I remember last time I was raising support before we moved here. At one church, I met a woman who was probably middle age, and she told me she had grown up as a missionary kid in Central America. And whenever I meet missionary kids who are adults now, I ask them, you know, what can you tell me as a father of missionary kids? And she said that when in her family, they were so devoted to the work, and also because it was expensive to go home, all the time growing up, she had only been back to the U.S. like once or twice before she went to college. And she said it was really difficult to make that transition to college because she was a foreigner, basically.
Yeah.
So it's important for the kids, too, to reconnect with friends and their home
culture
and be able to, you know, see, like, the options before them when they make their life choices. Like, this is what life is like in the U.S. This is what people are like. And, you know, where do I feel God calling me?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, another question that we got related to the first one was, why are we going back for 6 months specifically?
We're actually going back for 7 months.
Seven.
You keep saying
I
six
do,
months.
But it's seven.
It was 6 months, but I added a few more weeks because I had so many churches that wanted us to come. So
yeah,
it's gotten a little bit longer. But for one reason, it's just the expense.
Yeah.
Like, we're a family of seven, if nobody has noticed. And it's very expensive to travel in order to go back. You can't just do it every year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could, like, somebody would give them money, but are we being good stewards of God's resources if we're doing it that way when we can do it this way? And then secondly, I think maybe you can explain this because we've discussed it a lot. We see a lot of value, especially in our first term on the mission field, of being here for such an extended period.
Yeah, and this goes a little bit beyond the question, I think, but we feel like it's been really good that we have stayed here for 4 years solid without going back at all. It's been good for our family, good for our relationships here, good for us to just feel really rooted and grounded here. And that's traditionally since, you know, the last several decades since, I guess, air travel has become convenient, and that's how missionaries have gotten overseas. It's been pretty traditional for missionaries to do a 1 year furlough every 4 years.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we based our first 4 year term here on.
Yeah.
But we've seen other missionaries that have stayed in the U.S. for a year, and we just really didn't have any desire to stay for a whole year because it felt like we would just kind of be twiddling our thumbs for a lot of
and
that
it's
time.
Just, it's really hard. You parents know what it's like to get kids out of routine just for 3 months in the summer.
Yeah.
And here we are, you know, transplanting our lives.
Yeah.
You know, it's just really difficult on you as a family when you're not in your own home, you're not in your own routine. So we kind of hit that middle sweet spot, hopefully. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. This is our first time doing it.
Yeah,
so,
but it was very good for us to be here for that long. And a lot of missions agencies, that's their policy, kind of with the short-term mission movement, and a lot of smaller groups like our own, not having solid policies like that, people have kind of gotten in the habit of going and coming. And, you know, that's up to them and between them and the Lord. But there's something to be said about this being home and you being settled here and your mind being here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've been thinking about this furlough for 2 years and now we're really preparing for it. Could you imagine if we were doing this for 3 months every 2 years or 1 month every year. Like,
so much of your life would be spent preparing for it and then recovering from it when you get back.
Yeah.
I feel like it would just, but that said, we have talked about possibly going back to the States more often than 4 years, like with a smaller than 4 year break in the future.
Yeah, and that depends on, you know, family developments and, you know, as parents, you know, grow older or kids are in college, you know, life is going to change.
Yeah.
But especially in your first term, if you're feeling called to missions, you've really got to stay 3 or 4 years without going back and forth.
Yeah, it's...
I would strongly, strongly discourage you from going back to the United States. I mean, it's okay, like, if you want to go to a neighboring country for a vacation.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like, stay put and get your mind and your body and every, you know, your entire being rooted in the place God's called you to be.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why we're doing it the way we're doing it. And there are ways other people do it, and they do it that way because they think it's best, but you know, we have our reasons too. So,
and you've said that, Lord willing, if God one day ever brings us teammates here, that'll be something that you require of them.
Yeah. Maybe not exactly 4 years, but at least 3 years that you do not go back to the United States.
Yeah. That's how important we think it is.
Yeah. So somebody else asked why we're going back to Murray, Kentucky as our home base. So maybe you can explain that.
Well, Josh grew up just north of Murray in Hardin, Kentucky, and Hardin Baptist Church there is our sending church. I went to college in Murray for 2 years, the last 2 years. We have a lot of friends there. Our kids have a lot of friends there. We have a lot of family. Josh's family is mostly local to Murray or Hardin, and my family is mostly just north of that. So it's a really good location for us, both family and friend wise.
Yeah. And it just so happens that just this past week, we were told there was a house available for us to live in. So, you know, that helps too, that we actually have a place to live in Murray.
Yeah, we had actually just, we'd been looking at all of the housing options for a while, and it was pretty bleak. And so we'd actually just decided that living in an RV with 5 kids and a dog for 7 months was our best option.
Yeah, that was a hard decision to come to.
Yeah, but we really felt like that was best financially and logistically and everything.
So we couldn't rent because we couldn't afford rent, and because most people have a year lease, and that's very difficult. We didn't have any missions houses available, like houses for missionaries that were available to us.
Near Murray.
And we thought about buying, but the market is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Right now. So then it was the RV idea,
which I was pretty excited about. I mean, we got ourselves pretty pumped about it, but
we
made the decision. And then Josh said, let's just take a couple of days to pray about it. And it was during that time.
It was the very next day after I said that.
Yeah. We were praying about it that Josh's mom sent him a message and said, there's a house that your uncle owns, right?
Yeah, or the family business owns.
The family business owns it. We had talked with his parents before about the possibility because we knew they rented it, but they were like, no, they've got long-term renters there. They've been there for a long time.
Then all of a sudden,
it's not an option.
We hear they're moving out, so we can live in the house for a few months.
Yeah, which is really exciting. We're super excited. It's a sweet little 3-bedroom in Murray. And,
right on 4th Street. We'll be right down from the parks. So we're already talking about the kids playing soccer and different things. So
yeah,
it'll be a good experience for the family.
It will. We're really excited about it. So the other question that we got asked about our furlough is, what are some of the biggest challenges and joys that we anticipate during our furlough.
Which should we start with, challenges or joys?
Well, I feel like we were just kind of on the joyful path as we were talking about the home. You know, we're excited about the kids getting involved in some things in Murray and
Things that they aren't available here.
Yeah. And just being able to spend time with the friends that they made before we moved here.
Yeah.
And obviously seeing family is going to be one of our biggest joys.
Yeah.
We're super excited to just spend as much time as possible with our families. Mm-hmm.
Getting to do some traveling in the U.S. and, we're going to have to go out west to visit churches. So we're going to, on the way, visit a lot of the parks in the U.S.
I've already been planning for over a year, this road trip that we're going to take out west. We've got supporting churches in Colorado, Arizona, and Texas. And so we've planned this big road trip, and I'm really excited about all the things we're going to get to do between the Sundays at those churches.
Yeah, as long as we make it to the church for Sunday, we'll be okay. So in between, we have road trip planned, and that's exciting. And of course, you know, we have churches in North Carolina, so we're going to go to the Smokies, and you and I honeymooned in Asheville, so maybe we'll have a second honeymoon or something.
That would be awesome. Maybe the grandparents will keep the kids for a few days.
And my sister lives in Orlando, so we'll get to go visit her in Orlando. So we're going to do some traveling, catch up on some, you know, U.S. vacation that we don't normally get. But, you know, it's also between Sundays, you know, when kind of Sundays are my work week and my weekend is the week. So it's kind of flip-flopped for most people. So we're going to try to keep that mentality even when we're just stationed in Murray, because I'll still be traveling on the weekends. And then during the week, hopefully we'll go to Land Between the Lakes or go fishing or that kind of thing to make the week our weekends. Joys. What else? I love visiting churches. I'm excited about going back and visiting churches I've visited before and shaking people's hands. And I'm always love visiting new churches. I really get energized from it. So I'm excited about doing it again.
I just want to go to Target and get a Starbucks and walk around Target and look at all the beautiful things.
I want to go to Los Portales. I told the kids last night, we're going to eat at Los Portales every night. No, we can't afford, and our bodies can't afford to eat at Los Portales. But, you know, like we make Mexican food here, but it's not the same as restaurant Mexican food.
No.
So I'm excited to eat some restaurant Mexican food.
So our family for the last few months has been working on an America bucket list of things that we want to do while we're there. And I'm looking for it on my phone right now. But okay, we have 26 things on our America bucket list. And at least half of them are just places we want to eat.
Okay. I don't know that I know all of these. You and the kids
really?
Have been working on.
Do you want to hear them all or what?
Let's just see how far we go.
Some highlights?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, places that we want to eat is Annie Mae's, which is an allergen-friendly bakery in Louisville that we love.
That have the super cookie.
That are so good.
It's on Frankfurt Avenue if you go to Louisville.
We want to eat at August Moon in Murray, which I'm sure we'll do a lot. We want to go to a hibachi grill. I think that came up in conversation with the kids one day.
Yeah, they were like, what's that?
Yeah, there's a Hop Dottie in Nashville now that we really want to see. There are a lot in Texas, too, since we'll be driving through Texas. Mm-hmm. It's a burger place that I love, and they have amazing gluten-free buns. Okay, I lied. Those are actually the only food-related
ones. What else have the kids said they really want to do that they're looking forward to?
They want to go to a trampoline park.
Okay.
they want to go to a movie theater. Abe doesn't know what movie theaters are. My mom was trying to describe it to him one day. She was like, it's like a big house where they play movies like really big on the wall and you go sit and watch it. So
yeah,
that's a big one. They really want to go to a Murray State basketball game. Mm-hmm. Target is on my list. The kids all want to have individual nights with each set of grandparents. Yeah. They're really looking forward to that. Venture River, it's a little water park near where our
Jude,
parents live.
By the way, loves watching on YouTube GoPro videos of people at water parks.
So going down the slides.
We know about water parks in Dubai and Turkey.
The Bahamas.
And, yeah, like he just loves these GoPro videos of water slides and stuff. So we'll see if he actually likes the water slides in person or if he just likes watching them on TV.
Yeah, yeah. We really want to go to the Ark Encounter near Cincinnati. That's on our list.
Do I see bowling? Somebody wants to go bowling.
We do. We want to go bowling. Yeah. One of my personal bucket list items is I want to have another professional family photo shoot with our parents as well while we're there. So
instead of like putting it on a tripod and doing it all yourself on your timer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have someone else actually take the pictures for once. And you know, we did that right before we left and it was so good to have those pictures.
Yeah.
So that would be cool. And we also want to go to a county fair.
Okay.
Which should be fun.
Yeah. For people who like county fairs.
Yeah. That's not the whole list, but that's some of the highlights of some of the things that we really want to do. We're going to be pretty busy, I think.
Yeah. Challenges. Just getting back. A long trip.
Oh, just getting there. Yeah.
You know, most people when they travel here straight, it's like 26 hours, 28 hours, sometimes longer.
Yeah.
We're thinking about maybe breaking the trip up and stopping somewhere on the way so that we don't have to go through those 16-hour, 14-hour flights.
Yeah, and I've been looking at a bunch of options for that online over the past week, and there are some places where it looks like we could actually stop and spend a few days in a city, and it actually cost less, even with the like hotel and meals and everything, it would actually cost less than flying directly back to Kentucky. Yeah. So why wouldn't we do that?
Yeah. And it breaks the flight up for the kids. So we don't go insane.
Yeah. Cause it's like, I mean, I think 26 is the fastest, but it's often like 36 hours or more of constant travel. That's not on the airplane, but that's with your layovers and everything.
Yeah. So that's a challenge.
For sure.
Other challenges, being out of routine.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out what we're doing with homeschooling and how that's going to work with this crazy, you know, 7-month period. That's a challenge.
It is, which I've basically decided we're mostly just not going to homeschool while we're there and then scramble to make up for it when we get back because I just can't, my brain can't even think about the stress of trying to homeschool in the middle of everything else.
But
and we just want to enjoy it.
Everybody's going to be taking like one class while we're there.
Yeah. So Haley wants to continue with one of her live classes and she's good. She's really good at keeping up with those live classes. So, and Taylor and JJ will be doing a self-paced class.
Yeah. And the biggest challenge is just financial. Like it is very, very expensive to take a family of seven, take them back to the US and establish a life that's a temporary 7-month life. I mean, it's one thing if you're going someplace for 2 weeks, but like if you live in the United States, you have to have cars, you have to have, like you can't just drop into Western Kentucky and, you know, have nothing. So that's the challenge. We've put together a project list for donors, and they totaled up the needs from travel, so airfare, transportation, all that stuff, from renting a minivan for our family, from a leasing it from a ministry that does this for missionaries at a lower cost, buying a second vehicle for me to be able to go travel on Sundays and do meetings and stuff. And we have to have the RV, either rent or buy an RV to go visit the churches out west. All of that total projects is $51,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a big...
I mean, just the airfare for seven people is how much?
What was it? It was like $21,000 or $22,000.
Yeah.
Because when you're traveling that at that distance, it has to be one-way tickets, and
yeah,
that costs more, and it doesn't make sense, but it costs more than a round ticket.
Well, a one-way ticket doesn't cost more than a round trip ticket, but it costs more than half. It's about 3/4 of what a round trip ticket is.
Yeah.
It's not half like you would think.
Yeah, you'd think, okay, round trip is this, one way is half. That's not how they do it. So
2 one-way tickets is a lot more than 1 round trip.
You add into that the fact we have to all have COVID tests,
which are $100 per person.
Yeah, and you know, if we have to have them coming back, it could be another $100. So, I mean, it just is a lot of money. And this is beyond our salary. This is beyond our regular ministry expenses, because while we're gone, most of the ministry here is still going to be happening with the leadership of our team here. So it's not like we're shutting down Shepherd's Academy and now we have that money free to spend on our furlough. So, you know, this is all extra above and beyond that has to be raised, but the Lord is going to provide for it. Just like we already said, how he provided a house for us on furlough that, you know, and it was such a surprise. So he's going to do that too. But, you know, if you're listening and you want to give a major donation, this is something that we really need. And again, you can email me. I can send you the details of those projects and you can pray about it and give that donation.
Yeah. Didn't you've set up a furlough fund on the online giving?
Yeah. So there's a specific fund. If you go to gospellife.org/give and you select the furlough fund, and that goes directly to our furlough expenses. And the same thing if you give by mail, if you just write a note that it's for our furlough, then Brandy will put it in the right fund. And so that's the biggest challenge. That's what I think about a lot and pray about, because constantly taking those worries and anxieties to the Lord so that he can give us peace.
Yeah. Yeah. I think besides the funding, my biggest concern is Jude and taking him back. For one, for him to not have his amazing tutor Grace while we're gone is going to be hard. She teaches him so well, and she's so helpful for us, because Jude really... somebody has to have eyeballs on him at all times to know where he is and what he's doing. And that is exhausting.
Yeah. And it's easier here because we have a brick wall all the way around our yard.
And locked
gates. We have guards on the property. We're not on a busy street.
Yeah.
Even if he ran down to the road, it's not that busy. And if he ran away, like a white kid sticks out like a sore thumb.
He'd be pretty easy to find.
And most people in our neighborhood know who he is by now. So, you know, he's very safe here.
Yeah.
He won't be as safe in the middle of Murray, Kentucky, and the house is right on 4th Street and people drive crazy on 4th Street.
Yeah.
And so that's our big, you know, we're looking at new locks to install that he can't just unlock and run out of the house, and
that are expensive, but worth it.
So and that is,
and even with the dog, like we had originally thought that we would leave Ray here for our furlough, but as it got closer and I started thinking more about it, I thought, you know, the whole reason we got her was for search and rescue because he was running away a lot in America. And we haven't had that problem as much here. I mean, he has, but like you said, we have the guards and all of that that helps.
He doesn't get far. Anytime he's run away, he's just been like 100 feet away from our home.
Yeah, but you guys, I mean, anybody listening probably sees that there are regularly missing kids with nonverbal autism, kids that drown and die because they've run away. And so it's really scary. And
maybe like if you don't have a child with autism, you think, how could that happen? I don't know. Maybe you have sympathy, but maybe you don't realize like it is constant watching. And it wears you down.
Like if I'm home alone with the kids, Josh and Grace isn't there, then I have to ask one of the girls to keep an eye on Jude just for me to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, and here, thankfully, we can hire someone who's here from 8 to 5 during the week to take that pressure off of us for a little bit. And it's really been life-changing.
It really has been.
To not have that constant pressure, you know, your mind constantly on multiple things. But in the U.S., we can't afford to pay someone to do that because wages are so much higher. So, so we're hoping that maybe some people from church or some Christian college students may volunteer to give us a few days in the week that we can just relax for a moment mentally.
Yeah. So if you're listening and you feel like you'd be able to do that, we would gladly accept that help. If you're listening and you think that would be something that you would be able to do or you know somebody, please get in touch with us. We would be super happy to accept any babysitting help with the kids that we can get while we're there.
We're used to having a weekly date here, and that would be hard if we had to give that up for 7 months because it's so important for our relationship and our mental health and our family.
So important. Yeah. And now it's time for our cultural tidbit segment of the podcast.
Which today is not as much a cultural tidbit as a, I don't know, an environmental tidbit.
Well, I mean, so we decided today that we would talk a little bit about rainy season. Mm-hmm. And rainy season affects the culture here in so many ways.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. So rainy season in Malawi typically is from the end of November, 1st of December into March, maybe a little bit into April.
Yeah, it kind of takes a bit to build up and then peters out. Kind of too.
So most of the year, well, I'd say there. Then after rainy season from about April to July is kind of is cold season,
and you can get August.
You can get some rains there, but it's not the pouring, pounding rain we get during rainy season.
Yeah, it's more like sprinkles.
And then from August to the beginning of rainy season is dry season. It's hot season.
August is cold season. September is hot.
Yeah, September it starts to get very hot
quickly.
Very, very hot, very dry. As we build up to the rains. So,
but the rains have been late this year.
Yeah. So, and haven't come in some parts of the country, including the lower Shiri, where we have a lot of churches and do a lot of ministry. You can really be praying for the people there because what tends to happen in that area, they have more extreme weather. So it can be like famine conditions. And then all of a sudden, rain will come and it will be floods.
Yeah.
So we really need to pray for them that the rains will come at the right time in the right way, so that they can grow their crops. And everything just revolves around this time of year because most Malawians are farmers.
Yeah. And if they put their, they usually put their seeds in the ground with the first rains.
Yeah.
And then, but what's happened this year in a lot of places is that we got a few first rains and they put their seeds in and they started to grow. And then we didn't get any rain again for a long time.
Yeah. So then they have to replant, which is very expensive for most people. And really causes them a lot of problems. I mean, we give a lot of personal loans to staff and stuff at this time of year so they can buy their seed and buy their fertilizer, because it's just so expensive for them to get what they need to put into the ground. But that's their livelihood. And we just see, unfortunately, and especially older people who have been around for a long time can tell us that the rains are becoming less predictable. They're becoming less rain. And a lot of that's related to deforestation in Malawi.
Yeah, which is a huge problem here.
The, you know, trees, developed forests produce rain.
Yeah.
And when you cut them all down, then the water just tends to evaporate and run off and leave. And then you create your, you change your environment into desert.
Yeah.
Just by cutting down the mature trees. And so that's happening here.
There are almost no mature trees except in protected areas.
Yeah. And people are starting to understand, but it might be too little too late. And so it's just a major environmental problem. You know, it, you think in terms of over 100 years ago, Americans cut down the forests and had bad farming methods that caused the Dust Bowl. And that's the same kinds of environmental problems that we're having here today. And, you know, it's down to whether or not Malawians will learn before it's too late, or they'll be like we were in America and have major disasters and Great Depression and that kind of thing and learn the hard way. And, you know, that's, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So that's our cultural tidbit but for today.
Maybe we shouldn't end on such a low note. The rains are here. They are great.
They, yeah, just this week, the, you know, everybody's saying that this is the latest the rains have ever started.
And you're always telling people that you love the rainy season. And they're like, wait, why would you love rainy season?
Yeah. I love rainy season because it cools everything down. It's been so unbearably hot. Like it'll be 95 degrees in our house.
And it doesn't rain all the time. It's like when you're in Florida and it'll rain in the afternoon or it'll rain overnight.
Yeah.
It's not like it's constant rain, or, and usually it might rain for a week and then you'll have a week of sunshine and then you'll have another week of rain. That's the best because that gives the crops the right of combination of stuff to grow well. And it's just so beautiful here.
It is. It gets so green. You know, I always tell people this, you know how new growth on a plant is a brighter green than the old growth? Well, in rainy season, this entire country just turns neon green.
And
it's
the
so
tourist
gorgeous.
Industry, rainy season doesn't attract tourists. So they call it green season.
Which I think is great. Yeah. I think this is the best time of year to visit Malawi because it's so gorgeous.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. And if you've come to Malawi in July or August or October, then you just wouldn't believe the difference between what Malawi is like with rain and what it is in the dry season. It's absolutely the best time of year.
It really is. I love it so much. We had a few questions about Malawi also when we asked for questions. Yeah,
so this is non-furlough related questions that we received, right?
Right.
Yeah. So what's the first one?
Well, the first one is from a fellow missionary here in Malawi. So it's a kind of, I think, a term that we'll have to explain. But they asked what our favorite Malawian relish is.
So when we use the word relish, we think of what you put on hot dogs.
I love it too.
But in when Malawians use the word relish, they're talking about the different kinds of vegetables and meats and things that they eat with nsima, yeah, which is their main staple food. So, it, you know, there's all different kinds, and some of them we've enjoyed and some of them not so much.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite?
I think my favorite is just the cooked cabbage.
Yeah.
It's seasoned really well, and I just really like it.
Or I just like any of the greens they do. So it might be pumpkin leaves. You don't like pumpkin leaves?
Pumpkin leaves have a weird texture to them that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
But most greens I like.
Yeah, I love all the greens. Like, and it's cooked kind of like wilted spinach, you know, that we would cook in America. That's the closest thing. Meat wise, I like chicken. It's probably the simplest.
The beans are really good. The kids love the beans, and I have to admit they're seasoned really well. They're good.
I had somebody cook green beans for me, and they cook it in tomato sauce, which
Not
like we cook green beans, but it was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if I have a favorite, but I have a lot that I like. I have some I don't like.
The little fish?
Little fish I do not like. Intestines of any sort I do not like.
I haven't been served that. You got served that out in a village, didn't you?
Yeah, and you do not. Let's just not talk about goat intestines.
Mmm, yum.
So that's about Malawian food. The next question is, what was our favorite activity of 2021? So does this mean just like our favorite family activity?
Well, I said either individually or as a family.
Okay.
So just the favorite thing we did.
The favorite thing we did in 2021. Mm,
that's tough.
Yeah. Always going to the lake and having some downtime at the lake.
Yeah.
Hiking, kayaking. That's what we do to get a little bit of a release and rest.
That is, that's probably number one. And I don't know if, I'm going to say it's probably my favorite, was our trip on the Alala to Lacoma Island.
Yeah. So you have an entire blog post about this that we can put in the show notes for people who are not familiar, and it has pictures and stuff. But tell us what the Alala is, first off.
So the Alala is like a ferry boat, but not, I think of ferry boats like in Marion that carries cars across the river.
Yeah.
This is more like a people and cargo ferry.
Yeah.
And it goes up and down the lake every week and carrying people and stuff, mostly fish. And so we rode it from the very bottom most port of the lake up to an island called Lacoma Island.
That's about halfway up the lake, which Lake Malawi is super, super long.
Yeah.
It feels like Lacoma Island should be at the very top, but you look at the map and you're like, whoa, that was just halfway up the lake.
Yeah. And it took us, almost two whole days on the Alala to get to Lacoma.
Yeah.
And then about two whole days to get back.
Yeah.
And it was just, our blog, we have a travel blog that's adventurologists.com. Like Josh said, he'll put a link to it. But you got to go to the blog and see the pictures and just read the account. It's unlike anything we have ever done before. It was absolutely insane. I have a whole separate blog post just about getting on and off the Alala, because that was so crazy. That was probably my favorite part, honestly.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
It was very difficult. There were times that we all kind of lost it during this trip, but at the same time, super, super proud of our kids. They really did an awesome job.
They did. They were troopers.
And they were so flexible, and you know, it was hot. It was stinky. There were people everywhere. There were drunk guys everywhere. And they just, the kids did awesome.
They just rolled with it.
Yeah. So I'm so proud of them for that.
Yeah. But it was crazy. Yeah. It was nuts.
Yeah. I enjoyed that, but I prefer to just go and relax at the lake, I think.
Yeah, no, it was not relaxing.
I will never forget that, but it's checked off my list now.
Exactly, but it was super cool. It's one of those things that I think everybody who lives here should do.
Yeah, once. It has been on the lake since, what, the 50s?
Yeah, something like that. I have it in the blog post.
It's a landmark. The boat is a landmark in itself.
Yeah.
For Malawi. So.
And if you live here and you're thinking about doing it, I have a lot of suggestions and tips for doing it and making it slightly less miserable than when we did it, which mostly involves not starting at Monkey Bay, but starting farther up.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What's the next question then?
The next and last question we got was a very deep theological question.
Okay.
And she asked, how do we engage our culture, our children, with the worldly culture in Malawi? And she gave examples of postmodernism and relativism as examples of worldliness. And she asked if there are examples that they interact with daily in Malawi.
Yeah. So this is kind of a tough question to answer because Malawi is just so different from the U.S. in this respect.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the U.S. right now, as a parent, you're probably worried about, you know, what they're being taught at school.
About gender and
yeah, and even just, you know, the things she listed. If you don't know what postmodernism is, it's just the philosophy or perspective that all truth is personal, that there is no objective truth, that what's true for you might not be true for me. And so then relativism is related to that because all truth is about you being genuine, you being your authentic self, which then, you know, we see in the, you know, transgender movement and all kinds of things. Those are kind of ways that that's expressed in our culture, and then the ways those things are coming into our schools, either officially or even unofficially through, you know, kids' peers and things, is a big concern for parents in the U.S. But here, I think the best way to explain the way things are here, it's like Bible. Like the Bible Belt when the Bible Belt was still the Bible Belt.
Yeah. And it reminds me a lot of the American South.
Yeah.
In a lot of old American South.
So most people, there are Muslim areas of the country. There are more traditional areas of the country that are more remote. But most people have an understanding of Jesus, God, morality. The problem is they just don't live it. Like they know.
They don't really have an understanding of the actual gospel.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't understand the true gospel. It's legalistic, but at the same time, everybody's just being a good old boy kind of.
Exactly. Most everybody would say that they're a Christian, but not a lot of them are actually living that way.
Yeah, and we deal so much with sexual immorality and adultery and premarital sex and those types of things. We don't deal with homosexuality. It's absolutely...
It's still very taboo.
An abomination to Africans. In some of the bigger cities, it's becoming... There are movements for, you know, that kind of thing like we saw 20 years ago in the United States, just beginning. But for most Africans, it's just like, why? That's completely insane. And so we don't see that. We see more, you know, I don't know what you call it, bread and butter sexual immorality. you know, the more staple kinds. And I asked the pastors once in a sermon, I asked them, do you think that one day there'll be any Malawian that will stand before God and say, I didn't know adultery was wrong? And they all said, no, everybody knows it's wrong. And I said, so then the problem isn't that you don't know it's wrong. It's just you don't want to do what's right. Because we did, like, pastors, church members, like sexual immorality is so rampant here.
But the
problem isn't that they don't know what's right. They just don't do what's right. And so that's how do I relate this back to the question? But it's, you know, that's what some of us who are, I guess we're older now because we're in our 30s. That's how things were in West Kentucky when we were growing up.
Yeah.
Like it just began to be so different.
Yeah.
Maybe in my sister, when my sister was in high school, she was telling me about things high schoolers were doing that nobody would have done when I was in high school. And we're 4 years different.
Yeah.
But that's what things are like here. So it's like raising kids in the Bible Belt 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of raising them in America today, which is actually one of the difficulties we have as parents, because our kids will probably go back to the America today.
Yeah. For college and beyond.
Yeah. So, you know, when we do homeschooling, we're doing a classical Christian curriculum that helps them, that doesn't just isolate them from a lot of these ideas, but hopefully helps them to confront the ideas of the world and think through the ideas of the world. But it's weird for us because we have to explain things to our kids as they get older that they don't just pick up from the environment that like they would in the US.
Yeah.
Like we have to tell them, you know, we're telling our 13-year-old, yes, there are in America some people who are men who are pretending to be women. And this is like, we have to explain that.
Yeah.
Is it not like she just saw it on television or talked about it with unbelieving friends or something?
Yeah.
And we have to explain it because we don't want her just finding out about it
when they get there.
So, you know, that's kind of the challenge for us, which is different.
Yeah. And like you said about our curriculum too, I feel like it's being really helpful in preparing them for that. It deals a lot with worldview and culture and stuff like that. And they're discussing it with their live teachers and their classmates.
Yeah. And because some of the classes they take are live classes online, they're interacting with kids from across the United States, but across the world to other missionary kids. They have people in China and
doing live classes at midnight.
Yeah. And Europe and all over the world. So that's been very helpful for the kids. But, you know, with the second part of the question was examples of how they interact with people in their daily lives here. I mean, they see a lot of people drunk in public in Malawi.
Yeah.
More than you ever see in the United States, just completely falling over in the street, sleeping
in the ditch,
drunk, passed out.
On the Alala that we were talking about earlier, there was a man who got so drunk that he peed on himself and was just lying on the top deck. Yeah. And the kids, so it's really, I feel like
you see men naked, like literally just walking down the street,
yep,
completely stoned out of their mind, naked.
Yep. And I feel like that's been really, actually, not the naked men part, but the drunk men part has been good because it like alcohol and drunkenness doesn't have kind of that cool romanticness that a lot of teens grow up viewing it as. Like, they're just like, why would anybody want to do that?
Yeah. Like they're just abhor, they're just disgusted by beer and stuff. Like, we don't have to sit down and have a dare program with them, you know, just say no. Like, they're like, why would I want to walk down the street naked and be peeing on myself on the ground like that?
Yeah. I mean, we regularly have drunk men who stumble into our church service on Sunday morning.
We're just right down, you know, 100 feet from the bar. which I think is a great spot for ministry.
For sure. Yeah.
And they hear us singing and they come in, and we have men who they get them and they sit the drunk man in the seat. And if they start to wander up to the platform, they help them to gently sit down and stuff. You know, we have to kind of have boundaries so they don't interrupt the service, but it's also really good to, you know, hopefully the Lord will do something in some of these men's lives. And one thing we're praying about in the future, if we have teammates that can help us with work in the future, is a lot of people who've come to the faith in our neighborhood at Gospel Life Baptist Church have really struggled because they're addicted to alcohol or they're addicted to marijuana. And to have an addiction program that helps them and disciples them both on the medical side of getting off of those things, but also in the discipleship side, that's something that we really need to do in the future because we see so much of it. So time for everyone's favorite segment, what you're reading.
For me, I am reading, I'm not very far into it yet, but I'm reading Ron Chernow's biography of Alexander Hamilton, which, if you don't know, is what inspired Lin-Manuel Miranda to write the Hamilton musical.
And also, if you don't know, you need to read everything Ron Chernow writes, because he's an excellent biographer.
Yeah, you said the Washington was even better, right?
Yeah, the Washington biography is excellent. Also, his biography on Grant is really good and has big West Kentucky connections because of the Civil War in West Kentucky. And his biography on Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller, was really interesting too. He only has a couple that I haven't listened to yet, but yeah, anything he writes, I read.
Yeah, a lot of these I'm only reading because you've already read them. And so they're already on our shelf or in our Audible account. And I'm like, what do you think I would like to listen to next?
Well, I know what you will like that I'm listening to now that I just started 2 days ago, but already I can tell it's excellent. It's A Prophet with Honor, The Billy Graham Story. Oh. By William Martin. So it's like the major biography of Billy Graham. It's not an authorized biography. Like, it wasn't like officially like he could only write what Billy Graham wanted him to write, but Billy Graham gave him complete access to all the documents and interviewing anybody and writing as good a biography as possible. And he's a great storyteller so far. And just chapter 3 is an overview of the history of American evangelicalism and revival. And he goes from the Great Awakening all the way up to Billy Sunday and the day when Billy Graham was growing up. And he does it in a chapter. And I've never probably read anything that tells our history as succinctly and as well, kind of in the goods and the bads, as that chapter. It's really excellent.
If you haven't picked up from our What You're Reading segments up until now, we're kind of biography nerds.
Yeah, I love a good biography, and I love history, especially listening. If I'm audible books,
yeah,
I like the biographies. I use my regular reading time for other types of books, whether like academic, biblical studies and that kind of thing. But I like to listen to biographies or history.
I love that I'm reading and I'm learning something. Yeah. At the same time, it makes my reading feel more productive. I do enjoy a good fiction book every now and then, but I don't know. I just, you know, a good biography that reads like a fiction,
yeah,
but I'm also learning something. It's just that much better.
It usually helps me to like put my stresses and things in perspective. So, you know, and seeing how other people have dealt with difficulties is really encouraging. But, you know, I like reading about Lincoln and I like reading about Churchill. And it reminds me that whatever I'm facing, at least I'm not facing a world war, a civil war. So, you know, that always puts things in perspective.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Gospel Life Go.
God provides for the needs of Gospel Life through your prayers and gifts. To become a prayer or giving partner, go to gospellife.org.
We hope you join us in glorifying God by growing disciples who make disciples. We hope that you live a gospel life.
Too loud.
Okay,
don't speak so loud.
What?
Don't speak that loud.
Am I gonna do this forever?
Hello. Hello.